You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
What's up, guys? Welcome into Good Morning Lambeau. My name is Clayton. You can check us out on Packernet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Packers_access. You can email us, PackersTotalAccess@gmail.com. Text us, 865-658-5824. I'm joined alongside Jacob, live in Wisconsin. He had to step away for a second. Jacob, you just speak up when you get back, buddy. I'll be over here rambling. Oh, there you go. Sorry. We're good. All right, so I know we got a herd of people already in here. Good to see everybody. We got Greg in the house. We got Jarrell in the house. United Bates. United Bates over on Rumble. We're live on Rumble now, so if you'd rather use that platform, feel free to hop over there if you like that interface a little bit better. Just trying to give you all multiple options as we are now live on Facebook, YouTube, X, and Rumble. Let's see. We got a Streeter 87 in Rumble. Is this thing working? Yes, sir, it is. Yeesh. Yeesh. Gene Dent. We got John Cappell. We've got Chad Inc., Dan G., everybody following in here now. Good to see everybody. Hope y'all are having an awesome Sunday morning. So, Jacob, how you doing, bub?
I'm good. I'm still waking up. We're just getting the beginning of a three-day blizzard that's hitting my part of Wisconsin, so that'll be fun.
That's wild. You know, we've got some snowy backgrounds for Lambeau because I'm trying to push us right into spring. I'm trying to help here. I really am with these background shots. So, I know we want to look forward to weather like that back there, don't we, Jake?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Although we've had a really, really light winter, if anybody up north can attest to, it's been crazy weird. So
yeah, you take what you can get, man. That's for sure. So what I thought we would do today, gang, obviously there's not going to be a show tonight, at least as of right now, unless the guys want to do one. If I make it back in time, I'll throw it together, but got to run back home to Kentucky for a funeral. So we'll be back definitely tomorrow with PTA Live and possibly the guys for Good Morning Lambeau. But like I said, if I make it back in time, we'll just throw up a surprise stream this evening. What we're going to cover this morning, I thought it'd be cool to kind of go back and look at the 2023 NFL draft. And what I mean by that is, you know, this time of year, you know, you kind of get caught up in all of the hoopla of the pre-draft festivities, right? You've got everybody doing mock drafts. We've been doing a ton of them. You got people creating their big boards. You guys know I've been very vocal how I try to create my board before all the RAS, all the athletic score, all the combine stuff comes in and shakes things up, because I want to know what strictly happened on the field. How did people feel about these players before they tested, right? And the testing will affect the board as well. But it never fails, Jacob. We get into the draft and picks start flying off the board, and there's a lot of surprise picks. There are every year, especially with Brian Gutekunst as your general manager. But it never fails. You look back and go, of course that guy got taken there, right? So I thought it'd be cool to kind of go back to 2023, look at what happened from a Packers standpoint, revisit all the picks. Where were they sitting on the consensus big board? Where were they on my top 150, that type of thing, right? So before we jump into it, Jacob, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And I didn't prep you for this. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the 2023 NFL draft? Just the first thing that pops in your mind looking back on the 2023 draft?
Tight end.
It was tight end rich, wasn't it, man?
Yeah. I guess that's probably just we've talked about how Goody seems like when we have a position of need that he'll attack it with maybe two or three different draft picks and hope that, you know, one of them sticks. Well, yep. I think that obviously he, when he picks somebody, he thinks that they're going to be good, but I don't think in his wildest dreams he thought that he'd maybe hit home runs with both Kraft and why can't I think of his name? Musgrave. So yeah, it's I'm just interested to see what position groups, if he does that sort of style of attacking in this draft. You know, like we've talked about how in years past when we needed wide receivers, you know, he took two or three of them. When we needed offensive linemen, he'll pepper that in. When we needed certain other positions, he seems like to hammer it. So yeah, I would expect him to maybe go pretty hard on interior offensive linemen and linebackers, but we'll see.
That's one thing, too. Like, we always talk about markets on this show, right? We talk about the free agency market. We talk about the draft market. If if you've got a high supply of something, then it's going to drive the value down, right? And I heard Greg Cosell say the other day, I heard Mel Kiper say it too. Now, listen, full disclosure, I'm not a big Mel Kiper fan, me personally. I just don't see him. Yeah, exactly. I don't see him as someone where I'm like, okay.
Who in the hell is Mel Kiper in a way?
He's been covering the draft for a very long time. He obviously knows more than me, but he's never been in the building, right? He's never been behind front office doors and working a draft board and all that. He's a media member, so you know how those guys are. They're given, I don't want to say a script, but they're given a, hey, this is the angle you take. You're going to take that angle type approach, right? So with that being said, you never really know how things are going to shake out, but you got to find those that you trust. You got to find those that, okay, these are the ones that I feel like the information is as pure as possible. They're going to be wrong too. Guys, general managers are wrong. You know, the hit rate, the NFL draft is so low. It's still a crapshoot, even though we got all this technology and everything to try to filter these prospects in the proper way. So let's just kind of jump into it real quick. I'm going to start with my big board from last year, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I just want to briefly mention some of these players, okay? I'm going to start at one and go like through the top 10. I had Jalen Carter, defensive lineman at one, Bryce Young, quarterback at two, Will Anderson, edge from Bama at three, Christian Gonzalez, cornerback at four, C.J. Stroud, quarterback from Ohio State at five, Devin Witherspoon, I believe it was his name, Devin Witherspoon, cornerback from Illinois at six, Tyree Wilson, edge defender from Texas Tech at seven, Will Levis, quarterback from Kentucky at eight, Anthony Richardson, quarterback from Florida at nine, Bijan Robinson, halfback from Texas at 10. Okay, so you get your first running back there. Some people were saying, oh, you'd never take a running back that high. I can't remember when Atlanta took him. He diced us apart, though, Jacob, unfortunately. So
just
an example of when you can get a, you know, I heard some scouts, I don't want to say scouts, people who have talked to scouts say that he is as good as some slot receivers in this draft right here. He was last year. At catching the ball. Like he was that good out of the backfield catching the ball, right? Lateral explosion was a big thing too. But Joey Porter Jr. from Penn State at 11, cornerback. You have Miles Murphy, edge defender from Clemson at 12. Peter Skoronski, tackle from Northwestern, I think it was, in the 13th spot. In the 14th spot, we had offensive tackle Broderick Jones from Georgia. 15, we had offensive tackle Paris Johnson from Ohio State. 16, we had wide receiver Jordan Addison from USC. Obviously, had a pretty good rookie campaign up there in Minnesota, if I remember correctly. And then at 17, we had Lucas Van Ness from Iowa. Okay, you'll notice the grade next to Lucas Van Ness, 13.6. That would suggest he's worthy of a 13th pick. Now, my board is going to change a little bit this year in that regard because I added a couple more elements to it. After him, we have Brian Branch. You guys know I was standing on the table for Brian Branch, right? Would have been nice to have him in the slot and then playing safety in the base last year. However, I'm happy with the Lucas Van Ness pick. So I'm not going to go any further. I just want to mention there was, I think he's on here, the next pick we made, Luke Musgrave. You guys remember live on the draft stream, I was like, yeah, I'm all about Luke Musgrave right here. When we drafted him, he was 27 on my board overall. He was worthy of the 27th pick. We got him in the second round. So just kind of an example there. And I'm going to bounce back and forth, not from this image, but we're going to look at the consensus big board from last year, okay? So what we're going to be going off of from the Packers standpoint is I took the RAS card. Let me go ahead and drop that Good Morning Lambeau logo down real quick. I took the RAS card, and I added the PFF grades on the left here, okay? So those are the PFF grades from their rookie year last year, okay? That's how they perform. If they're above a 60, I put them in the green. If they're below a 60, I put them in the red. Typically, that's the threshold. If someone you know has a grade of 60 or more or higher, typically a pretty good indicator they're going to be a good football player. You guys heard me say for half the season last year, I felt like Dontavian Wicks should be the number one receiver. He should be getting more opportunities, right? I think he finished on the team third in total snaps amongst wide receivers. He graded out the highest by far, 77.8 was his PFF grade. So that was definitely the gem of the draft, getting him in the fifth round. But, Jacob, I can pull my big board back up. You can look at this. You got any comments before we pull up the consensus big board here?
Just kind of echoing what Ron just said here, it's interesting that two of the better players as far as PFF grades go were two of the ones that were in the yellow as far as RAS goes, which is obviously not very typical for Goody. It's not like him, especially when you go to Jaden Reed that early, you know, to go to a guy with such a low RAS score. It's just kind of cool. There obviously was something there in the scouting that told them that they can look past that RAS score. So it'll be interesting to see this year which guys maybe will break that mold.
Yeah, and like someone pointed out on Twitter when I tweeted this out, there were reports that the Packers had Jaden Reed having a sub-4.440, which would have changed his RAS. I don't know how much it would have changed because his size composite grade was what really brought him down, if I remember correctly. Nonetheless, it's a great outlier there, right? And Carl Brooks, for all those PFF haters out there, the writing was on the wall for Carl Brooks. Go look at his PFF grades in college. They were just through the roof, elite. Yeah. So it's, again, I'm not a PFF fan because someone told me to be a PFF fan. I'm a PFF fan because when it came on the scene, I was very hesitant. Like, what is this? Like, who's grading the players? Who's, you know? And then I heard Chris Collinsworth, here's a guy, explain one day. If you, and anyone who critiques it, he doesn't fight back. You know what he says, Jacob? I welcome you to come by headquarters and see what we do. Yeah. Just drop by and see what we do. Because he knows that's going to probably sell them on the fact, here's how we are grading the tape. Here's how we're approaching our point system, our grade system. So most of the time, the people that hate it won't take the time to drop by and look at it. So in my opinion, you got to kind of throw their opinion out the window if someone's not willing to at least be open-minded to something. Again, it's not the tell-all, end-all. People make mistakes. There's human beings grading these players, right? They're going to make mistakes. There's going to be bias in there, too. That's the thing. That, like, we all have our bias, right? Where we'll overlook something. You know, again, at the end of the day, we're all human. But so we'll kind of revert back to this throughout this whole process. SDM40 in the chat said ESPN redraft had six Packers in the top 60. How awesome is that? And what's really cool is Goody actually said typically they can get their first three picks in the first three rounds, I should say, they can get players on their top 50 board, which is really cool. So that tells you that Lucas Van Ness, Luke Musgrave, Jaden Reed, and Tucker Kraft were all in Goody's top 50, which is really exciting. The Kobe Wooden one is the one that's a little bit of a letdown for me. I was expecting him to do more, but I really think it was just Carl Brooks bursting on the scene and just kind of taking over. I'm pretty sure he got more snaps than Kobe Wooden, a lot more. Now, Kobe Wooden, if I remember correctly, pretty good on special teams, though, wasn't he, Jacob? Didn't he block? I think he blocked a couple kicks or something.
I was going to say, I thought he did good on special teams, but I also remember him in pockets where, like, I want to say that he tipped a pass up that almost got intercepted, and I think he was the one that almost missed an interception one time. I remember seeing him knife through on a few plays. I think that if he has a few more snaps this upcoming year, that he'd probably maybe take a little step. I mean, 57.6, he's kind of on that borderline, you know, like
that's a good point. Horrible, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, his special teams grade was 90.3. The next closest to him was Tucker Kraft at 80.6. So you got value there, regardless of the overall defensive PFF grade. So keep that in mind, guys. They don't couple in the special teams with the overall defensive or offensive grade. You can go offense, defense, or special teams. For the offensive players, I went overall offensive grade. For the defensive players, I went overall defensive grade. So that's how we got it. So you can see there was good value there with Kobe Wood, no doubt about it. I think there was good value with Sean Clifford, watching him on the sideline calling opponents the B word as they run out of bounds. I mean, me personally, so I kind of dig that, but that's just me being the toxic human being that I am, I guess. So we're going to revert back to this. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to now the consensus big board from last year, Jacob.
Can I ask you a question real quick while it's in absolutely. My mind? We had that article that talked about how Goody typically, after they're about to pay a lot of money for a certain position, he tends to then draft at that position the following draft. Do you see him actually maybe taking a poke at quarterback realistically at some point in this draft? And if so, when?
Yeah, you know, I think quarterback's always on the table, Jake. And I get hate for this, man. I get so much hate for this. And I get it. I understand. Like, I think we all pretty much believe now Jordan Love is the quarterback of the future, right? You go back to halfway point last year, there wasn't a whole lot of people still saying that, right? So if we've got the quarterback of the future, it is the most important position in the entire National Football League. Like, when I say that, I think people just kind of roll their eyes. Like, it is, if you just looked at the NFL as a business, it's more important than the head coach. I don't agree with that. I think the head coach is more important than the quarterback, but it is looked at. There have been times that teams have moved on from coaches for quarterbacks, right? And there's been times that when they draft, like a GM will draft a quarterback and the quarterback doesn't pan out, they'll get rid of that GM because he whiffed on that quarterback. You see, it's that valuable, right? So if you have a player, we did the horizontal board, the 33rd team horizontal board, you know, the mock draft with the horizontal board. The whole purpose of that exercise was to show you how the tiers line up. You can see the depth at each position. There's a lot of different things that pop to you on the horizontal board. But when you're going to draft and you're in the current tier of talent and there's a quarterback sitting there, every GM in the league is going, might want to pull the trigger on that, because that might be the next Russell Wilson in his prime. That might be the next Tom Brady, right? It's that important of a position. That it's why Greg Cosell and other people say there's two drafts every spring. There's the NFL draft and there's the quarterback draft. Quarterbacks are typically considered one tier higher than their actual tier of talent. It's that important. So to answer your question, Jake, if I'm going to say it this way, and I've said it before, I know people roll their eyes. If we get to pick 25 and the best player on the board is a quarterback, don't be surprised if they draft one. I'm just telling you. It all depends on how the board falls is what I'm saying. So you try to project, okay, how long can we wait for this player? But as you do that, you risk having to reach at certain points, right? Because you go, okay, well, this player is the best player on our board, but he's not projected to go for two more rounds. Why don't we reach and grab this guy who would be next, although he's projected to be, you know, drafted a little bit sooner, and then you end up missing on that player. I think it'll stay true to the board, and if a quarterback's there, I don't think they'll take one with the 25th pick. I don't think they'll take one with the first three rounds. If I had to put my money on it, I would say it would be after the third round if they do decide to take one. But it's going to take one of these top quarterbacks falling. When I say top quarterbacks, I mean like a Bo Nix, right? Someone like that somehow, some way, if we were to drop or a Michael Penix, you go, okay, the value's too good, we got to take him. Yeah, so I don't know if that answered your question or not. I think it's always on the table, even when you've got good quarterbacks. But Sean Clifford obviously didn't grade out well. I thought he did his job well, though. Again, his job is to be a backup quarterback and be that personal assistant to the starter. It seems like they've got some good chemistry there in the quarterback room. The teammates absolutely love him. You don't believe me, just go to Twitter and search Sean Clifford. I guarantee you one of the top 10 search hits will be a media video of him pushing around Mr. Magoo in a hamper after a win in the locker room.
That's right.
He's just one of those guys. And that stuff, as silly as it sounds, is important for the culture of your team. But yeah, I think it would be after the third round, Jake, but that's what you're asking, man. So I hope so anyway. I do not want them to take a quarterback in the first three rounds. But if they've got someone with a first round grade somehow, some way, right? And for those that think, oh, that's impossible, they would take a quarterback in the first three rounds, go back to 2020 and show me the tweet that you tweeted out or the comment you made where you said, I think they'll take Jordan Love in the first round. The only reason that happened was because they had a huge grade on Jordan Love that was, okay, this is too good to pass up on. So good that they traded up in the draft to get him. People forget that, right, Jacob? Like, that's they great. Traded up to get Jordan Love. So, and that was with Aaron Rodgers, obviously, still on the roster, and he would go on to win two MVPs. So, yeah, it's a very hot-button topic. People get mad when you mention quarterback when you already got one, but – the great GMs in the history of the game, Bill Walsh, you know, he had Joe freaking Montana. Guys, he went out and traded for Steve Young. He got his coaches and his staff together and said, all right, I'm thinking about trading for Steve Young and getting him from Tampa Bay. Let's go around the room. I want to hear from you guys. What do you think? They said there was not one single person in that entire room of front office execs and coaching staff that raised their hand to say this is a good move. And they said he got extremely pissed off, stormed out of the room, and made the trade anyway. And what happened? You end up getting rid of Joe Montana. Steve Young goes on to win you another Super Bowl, right? You hit on – basically, you had back-to-back Hall of Famers playing quarterback because you were willing to go out and get a quarterback, not even draft a quarterback, but go out and get a quarterback, trade for a quarterback when you already have one. It's the best time to do it. Because, you know, in the back of Bill Walsh's mind, Jacob, he's sitting there thinking, if I go get a young Steve Young that's got all this talent, this scrambling ability, this quick release, this everything that he does well, and he gets to sit behind Joe for a little bit, two things are going to happen. It's going to light a fire under Joe's rear end, right? And also, Steve Young is going to get to learn from one of, if not the best at that time. So, yeah. Kind of a similar situation here, right? And especially with the rookie contracts now being slotted, you're not paying a whole bunch of money for them, you know? So, good question, though.
That was the only realistic spot that I was kind of worried is that at 25, if like Bo Nix slides there, it just depending on what their ranking is of Bo Nix, that to me. But then just real quick, because I always thought that in my head, it makes sense to me if I'm a GM, like once every couple of years, take a stab at quarterback, try to show him off in the preseason. And
we all have smartphones and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
If he looks like he's a really good, you know, ace up your sleeve, then you can deal him away for maybe a first, second, third round pick and just kind of do that each couple of years to kind of just keep that little added incentive going, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to the chat real quick. I didn't know we were going to be talking about quarterback. This is awesome. Prince said, I agree if they go quarterback, it will be in the second wave in the mid rounds. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I don't think they've got their eye on anybody. Again, at 25, though, if one of those guys pop up, you know, don't be surprised if they take them. Let's see here. We've got Gene in the house says, Goody's thinking is draft a quarterback in the later rounds and turn him into a second round pick or a very good backup. I think that's, very, very good point there. Dave says it. Dave's MX6 Garcia says best time to draft quarterbacks when you don't need one. So true, man. So true. You don't put pressure on them. You don't feel the need to try to turn them into something that, you know, he isn't.
Do you remember in the 90s where at one point we had like Mark Brunell as a backup, we had Aaron Brooks as a backup, we had Detmer as a backup, we had
Kurt Warner.
We had like three or four.
Kurt Warner got cut from camp, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's and people go, okay, well, that was a different time. Bill Walsh, Mike Holmgren was Bill Walsh's OC. Mike Holmgren was Bill Walsh's OC. Mike Holmgren gets the head coaching job at Green Bay, and he takes everything he learned from Bill Walsh and implemented it in Green Bay. I know he wasn't the general manager, but that whole culture that he brung in, again, Ron Wolf was the GM, right? And he handpicked Mike for that reason because he wanted someone from that Bill Walsh staff. So he's got a book called The Winning Edge, I think is what it's called. Bill Walsh does. You can't find it anywhere. And Brian Billick, you guys remember Brian Billick, who was the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens that won a Super Bowl, right?
Yep.
He was actually the guy who wrote that book with Bill Walsh. If I remember correctly, he was like a PR guy for the 49ers way back then. And Brian Billick ends up going on to be a Super Bowl winning head coach. I think he coached in Minnesota for a short stint, got the job in Baltimore, and then won the Super Bowl. And I think it was Michael Lombardi asked Brian Billick the other day, hey, where can I find a copy of that book? He said, you cannot find one. There's something's going on with the publishing rights or something that they're not printing anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's literally the football Bible, Jacob. It is like 4 inches thick, bro. It's huge. Like they call it the football Bible, but I think it's called The Winning Edge, something like that.
Dude, go check Goodwills, man. I'm telling you, they have some really, I found some great football books at Goodwills.
Yeah. Yeah. I love finding those old gyms for sure, man. I could only imagine what it's like being in Wisconsin and finding old Packer stuff. Tim is the master at it. He'll pop up and look at what my wife found at a yard sale or whatever, you know, and it's just some really cool old memorabilia. But anyway, all right. let's do this. Let's look at the consensus big board as we go along. I'm just going to mention the top 10 here. Well, I'll get down to Lucas Van Ness because he was our top pick. All right. Bryce Young, this is a consensus big board from the 2023 NFL draft. Okay. This was the last consensus big board they put out before the draft. Bryce Young, number one. Will Anderson, number two. C.J. Stroud, number three. They nailed that, didn't they? Jalen Carter, number four. Devin Witherspoon, number five. Tyree Wilson, number six. Christian Gonzalez, seven. Anthony Richardson, quarterback out of Florida, eighth. B. John Robinson, nine. Will Levis, 10. By the way, did you see Tom Brady's quote the other day on Will Levis, Jacob?
Yeah, he said he was like the best quarterback in the league, didn't he?
He was like, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was really, really high praise for Will Levis. And he said, I see a lot of me in him, a young me in him. So watch out for Will, I'm telling you, man. I'm not saying it just because he played at Kentucky. That last year, he was cheeks in Kentucky. But, yeah, that last year, everybody was pissed at him at Kentucky because you could tell they were trying to preserve him so he didn't get hurt before the draft, and Kentucky really went downhill. They had to make some coaching changes. But everything you talk about that you need in a quarterback, now he's got the arm strength, don't get me wrong, but you talk about accuracy, quick release, right? He showcased all of those. His release was the quickest of anyone in the draft, in my opinion. C.J. Stroud's might have been a little bit quicker, but he was right there. His big thing is not protecting the ball. Post-snap read is the only thing that's holding him back, right? I think he's smart enough to pre-snap read, but that post-snap, once everything starts rotating after the snap, that's his biggest struggle. If he gets that down, I think he'll take a step this year with Tennessee. But anyway, Jackson Smith and Jigba, wide receiver from Ohio State in the 11th spot. Peter Skoronski at 12. Paris Johnson Jr. at 13. Joey Porter Jr., cornerback from Penn State at 14. And then Lucas Van Ness is in the 15th spot. All right, so if you'll keep an eye on the chat for me, Jacob. If you see anything you want to throw up, just throw it up there. I'm going to stay on this screen right here. So, Lucas Van Ness, we took him with the 13th pick, right? The 13th overall pick. And again, the consensus big board had him 15. And my board, I had him 17, worthy of the 13th pick with a 13.6 grade. So, right around the 13th spot, this is the guy that kept popping up last year, made all the sense in the world. And then, obviously, like we pointed out, his PFF grade was a 62.3, which is a pretty good sign. He's going to be a good pro. We'll see. He's got to continue to develop, continue to build, right? Had a 9.39 RAS. Did that catch you off guard last year when we drafted Lucas Van Ness, Jacob?
No, not really. I remember initially I thought like, oh, he's not even a starter. I think I was one of those idiots that looked at his snap counts and didn't realize that Iowa just has a tradition of starting their seniors no matter what. When you looked at the actual snap counts, he was basically the starter. So I think I came around to it pretty quickly, but I had seen him getting mocked to us so many times that it wasn't really that much of a surprise.
Yeah. Same here, man. And it's that position, right? Edge being that tier one of importance. We know Goody is willing to spend first round picks on edge defenders. We've seen him, you know, obviously taking Rashawn Gary, had a high RAS, doubling down there with Lucas Van Ness a few years later. So, yeah, everything lined up on the board. This, when we were picking, I look back at my board and I went, this feels like Lucas Van Ness here. So, all right, let's move on to the next pick. All right, the next pick was Luke Musgrave. We took him with the 42nd pick, right? So let's find him on the consensus big board here. So we took him at 42, the consensus big board had Luke Musgrave in the 50 spot. He peaked at 34. So if you average those two numbers out, guess what, right? I think this is hilarious too. You know, we talk about, well, he's projected to be mocked to this team, right? Look at the these three of the top four tight ends were all projected to go to Green Bay, which is just hilarious. So Luke Musgrave, again, we took him at 42. He was 50th on the consensus big board, and this was the one I specifically remember during draft day, looking back and going, this has got to be Luke Musgrave. I remember saying, this has to be Luke Musgrave. He was 27 on my board. So I had him as the 27th best prospect, and we got him at 42, man. You're talking about value. Holy cow. And many times the value will be there for, you know, my board, but the consensus big board won't be there. Picking him at 42 and he was sitting in the 50 spot with a peak of 34, that's pretty solid, man. Pretty darn solid. So, what did you think about Luke Musgrave when we took him?
I mean, I was really into the tight ends. I wasn't big on Mayer, wasn't big on Kincaid. I was really into, I like Tucker Kraft a lot, and I really liked Laporta. Musgrave to me was just a big question mark because he had a lot of limited time and it was such a small school and he was a little bit thinner and all this kind of stuff. So it made me more, I guess, trusting when they did take him in that second round, because obviously that means that Goot saw something in him. And other than the early stuff when he started, you know, with his career in Green Bay, where he, for whatever reason, could not catch a pass and stay on his feet. Seemed like towards the end of the year, he started to figure that out. So it'll be cool to see him and Tucker in year two for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think it's and again, it's just doubling down, right? Mark Zambito in the chat says, remember, rookies are normally bad, so these grades are encouraging. Absolutely, Mark. That's why I always say the 60s. If they crack the 60s, right, pretty good indication they're going to be good. If they crack the 70s, it's a pretty good indicator they're going to be great, right? You know, and I say, okay, baby giraffe legs. Hello. Yeah, exactly. Never forget.
Do you remember the post game when LaFleur is like, yeah, Musgrave stayed on his feet? Yeah.
I went nuts. And there was many times that he failed, that the throw was really off the mark too. But yeah, it was cool to see everybody have fun with it, because you do. You expect a guy that's that athletic, 9.78 RAS, you got to be able to have a little bit better body control. What's funny is when I went and watched the tape, I did a chalk talk on him. As soon as he was drafted, I did a chalk talk. You can go back and watch it. You know what stood out to me the most, Jacob? In a positive, body control. This guy's got total body control. He comes out his rookie year and he's falling all over the place. I was like, man, maybe I need to study the tape a little bit better. But in college, he did, man. He was just situationally aware, spatially aware is the better way of putting it. He knew right where the defenders were when he caught the ball. He was just had he showed total body control, but for whatever reason, NFL, you know, it was just lacking a bit. Battled some injuries too, right? Yeah. Talking about the tough son of a gun, man. Internal bleeding, and that dude didn't want to be taken out of the game. I know it sounds silly, but you got to mention that, man. All right, so next would be Jaden Reed in the 50 spot, okay? We took Jaden Reed, wide receiver from Michigan State, in the number 50 spot. So if we go to the consensus big board, this one was fun. Jaden Reed is in the 89 spot, according to the consensus big board, okay? And I remember when they took him, this was a learning experience for me. I went, who? I was Snoop over here. I went, who? I'm like, why in the world are we not taking Jalen Hyatt, I think was his name. Where's he at? Yeah, look at Jalen Hyatt in the 39 spot, okay? Now, if you guys remember, first of all, we traded back, right? We traded back twice running from Jaden Reed, if I remember correctly.
Yep, we did.
So when we're on the board and we trade back, I looked at the board and was like, okay, they like somebody. What it means, guys, think back to the horizontal board that we did with the 33rd team with that mock draft. What it means is they had somebody that was at the very top of their horizontal board, right? Maybe a couple of people that they knew other people weren't going to be on. So typically you have about two or three players and you go, okay, let's trade back five spots. Chances are one of them will be there. That's normally what happens. They traded back the first time. That's what I said on the stream. And then when they traded back the second time, I swiveled my chair around that big board and I went, my exact words were, who the hell are they looking at right here? Why are they traded back twice? And I remember telling Ryan, I believe on the stream, I'm like, there's got to be somebody
that said out loud. Yeah, you went, they got somebody that nobody else wants and they know it.
Yep, exactly. So I went down on my big board again. He was in the 80s. I forgot you were on that stream. So I'm glad I'm not losing my mind thinking that I said it and I didn't.
Yeah.
If I scroll down on my big board, I had Jaden Reed. If I could find him, he is way down here, man, which is wild. Jaden Reed, I had in the 127 spot, Jacob. 127. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. I was worried when they drafted Reed, so happy to see I was wrong. And here's what happened, David. We all were. I looked and said, 127, what did they? And that night, bro, I stayed up and was like, I got to figure out what the heck's going on. What 2022 highlights looked? I'm like, what did they see? I went to 2021. Oh, my God. 2021 was, he was a freaking superstar. So this year, we implemented on the draft board so this doesn't happen again. 2 years prior to their draft year. So essentially 2023 grades, 2022 grades. You guys have heard me kind of point out throughout this whole process of previewing the draft. All right, let me explain to you why this guy's so low on my board when he's really high on others. And nine times out of 10, it's because this year they had a great year, but the year before, being 2022, they had a really low PFF grade. Yeah. So if you're going to do it, it's a positive, you got to do it for the negative too. But you've got a couple players where it's why Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is so high on my board, Jacob, is because he has been solid PFF wise the last 2 years. I could care less about how tall he is. Go ahead, buddy.
No, I just thought it was a good highlight here. Dave's MX6 Garcia said that one of the tradebacks ended up being Brooks. Yeah, that's true. And then another one of the tradebacks was Dontavian Wicks. So that's why I'm such a huge proponent of trading back at maybe the 25 spot, because imagine this team without Wicks and Brooks. I mean, it's pretty big dent right there. So
that is a great point. Gotta love our listeners, dude. That's awesome. Like, if you don't trade back twice and you don't pick up those two players, if they were the picks we took, that's a totally different draft class, Jacob. Yep. Imagine it without Carl Brooks and without Dontavian Wicks. And let's say you just hit in the red on the next picks. You got four good picks and the rest was pretty much that's huge. Absolutely huge. So, again, that's why the horizontal board matters. And I know people like to do their own little spin on their boards and stuff, and they keep it vertical and color-code it and all that. We all color-code everything. But the horizontal board, man, it talks to you. And you could tell that Goody – that's the other thing, too. We, you know, many people look at the mock drafts like it's just silly. Like, nobody follows the mock drafts. The reason mock drafts became so popular, there was a funeral home director or owner, and they said that he had so much time on his hands, always sitting around at work, that he decided he was going to do mock drafts. And he would basically, this is how he'd gather information. This is way back in the day before the internet game. And he would comb through newspapers, local publications, and they would talk about this team said these are their favorite prospects. So he started compiling that information, and he started doing mock drafts. The league, he got so good at it that league executives, I think this was back in the 70s or 80s, I think it was the 70s, would actually, he started putting out a mock draft every year, a magazine. Every executive in the league had that magazine, and they used it like almost like a guide, like a roadmap to the draft that year. That's how popular it became. So, yes, we go overboard with the mock drafts. There's no doubt about it. But don't kid yourself. They've got multiple horizontal boards set up in their front offices, every team across the league. And they've got mock draft boards going, we're hearing this team likes this player here. This team likes this player there. That's why we call this Lion season. They're always trying to send those smoke screens out, too, to throw people off.
I think, too, people forget that we do these mock drafts not necessarily because we think this is how it's going to fall. It's because it's a exercise as to, like, if this happens, then I have to do this, or if this happens, I have to do that. And we forget that we have the luxury. We sit down here and we diagnose each prospect for like 5-10 minutes. They've got a clock. They've got, like, at most, you know, usually was it 5 minutes in the first round or something like that? Then it's 3 minutes, you know? So it's, once you have an actual timed, you know, timer clocking you, it's the pressure gets a little more intense and you start sweating, and then you start overthinking or underthinking. You make stupid moves. Or if you're the Vikings, you miss on two picks completely in a year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny too, because we're sitting during the first round of the draft going, God, this is taking forever. Those front office executives are going, this is going too fast. They don't have enough time. Right. Of course, we're sitting over here slamming stuff, crust pizza and drinking daddy soda. So a little bit different mindset, obviously. So, I don't work out like you, Jacob. I'm over here slamming the pizza. You know what I'm saying? So, all right. So, Jaden Reed, that was really cool how that all fell into place there for sure. SDM40 says mocks reveal positional values and strengths. Absolutely. And what are positional values? That is determined by the other teams and how much value they're placing on the player. Right? It doesn't matter how much you think your house is worth. What is someone willing to pay for your house, right? That whole mindset. What are you laughing at?
Real quick, Dave says, I think I watch too much football, LOL. And Chris says, my wife says I watch too much PTA.
My wife says I talk too much PTA. So right. We're all in the same boat here, all right? Well, we'll sleep in the yard together, I guess. So there you go. All right, so next pick. We're at the 38-minute mark. I think we're doing good. We'll probably speed up here in a second because my board runs out at 142. Tucker Kraft. We take Tucker Kraft with the 78th pick. That was in the third round, right? 9.68 RAS just through the roof. It ended up grading out to be a 60.4 PFF wise, right? Let's see what the consensus big board had for Tucker Kraft. Again, we took him at the 78 spot, all right? So 78, Tucker Kraft. They had him, the consensus big board had him at 67, and he peaked at 46. Great value there, right? Jacob obviously taking him with, what was it, the 78th pick. Now, if we look at my board, I had him a little lower, if I remember correctly. I wasn't as high on him. I had him in the 80th spot, but he was worthy of the 69th pick with a 69.6 PFF grade. So great value according to the mock draft database, great value according to my board. And obviously, Goody thought enough of him. I think they really hit on Tucker Kraft, man. 60.4 was the PFF grade. Again, Luke Musgrave, 68.1. He still is tight end one. I kept trying to push that agenda last year. I think Tucker Kraft can be tight end one. It's just nice that you, you're talking about a hell of a camp battle for tight end one there this coming summer, Jacob. That's Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, man. What did you think when we took Tucker Kraft? I know he was the life of the party for our draft show last year.
Yeah, I mean, I was jacked. I love Tucker Kraft. He was maybe, other than Laporta, he was probably one of my favorite tight ends just because of the sheer size of him. And, yeah, I didn't even know that he was the coolest dude since the other side of the pillow. But you have to remember, too, that with his grading, he did not have a great start of his, you know, first half of the season. He was very clunky as well. He seemed like he was – the game was maybe moving a little fast for him, but all of a sudden it was like – exactly when Musgrave went down, he just all of a sudden elevated his game to the point where towards the end of the year, he looked like a pretty seasoned vet already. So that's cool. It's going to be really cool to see which one of these guys or how many of them can take that big second year leap. And if so, like how big it'll be.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Completely agree. I think the big thing for me with Tucker Kraft is the game isn't too big for him. You know, he's such a massive human being. He's so physically imposing that he's not going to have that intimidation factor. And he even talked about he loved blocking people, taking them to the ground. He said, feeling the air leave their body as he puts them on the ground. It's like, yeah, this dude is not going to be intimidated. I feel like Luke Musgrave is a little bit intimidated out there. That's why he doesn't have as much body control. He's kind of looking for the big hit and whatnot. But that's Luke Musgrave's a physical freak, and Tucker Kraft's one of those guys that'll run you over. I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Yeah, strong ending for sure. Mark says Luke Musgrave had a slow start, but a strong ending, definitely. Kraft increased his grade in the second half of the year, Ron Sample says, and blocking too. His blocking, you looked at tape, Ron, his blocking is so much better. He can block, exactly right. Wish Emilio was in here, that dude. Hope you're feeling better there, Emilio. I know you're hanging out in here somewhere acting like you're working. Now, he ain't working, it's Sunday. He probably ain't even out of bed yet. He snuggled up to his Lightning McQueen pillow right now. So, all right, let's move on to the next pick. Again, great value there, right? Kobe Wooden, right? 57.6 was his PFF grade. So defense, but we talked about special teams, hands down the best special team player we had last year, right? Took him in the fourth round, pick 116. His RAS was 9.25, okay? So we take him at 116. Let's see if we can find him here on the consensus big board. Kobe Wooden. They had him in the 150 spot, all right? And we took him again, Jacob, at the 116. So we reached according to the consensus big board, but it's important to notice he peaked at 61, right? So if you were to take where he peaked and where he was currently rated when the draft happened, that put him somewhere. Where would that put him there, you think? Probably around the 100 mark, something like that, a little bit higher than the 100 mark, roughly. So with that being said, doesn't feel like much of a reach there, taking him at 179, obviously. With him sitting at the 150 spot, man, that's good value. Let's see where I had Kobe Wooden on my board. I don't even remember. He definitely wasn't on my radar like, hey, I think the Packers will take him. But look at this. I do remember it being good value. I remember when they took him, like, man, great pick. 98. I had him 98 on my board, and the Packers took him again at 116. So great value there with Kobe Wooden. And you know, you pointed it out, Jacob. Obviously, the PFF grade is a hard one to look at there with the 57.6. He obviously didn't get near as many snaps as Carl Brooks. At least that's the way I remember it. But special teams, man, it just seems like we're finally focusing a little more on special teams. And if he goes on to be one of, if not the our best special teams player as far as punting or point of attack player on punt return, and then also in field goal block unit, I think it's well worth the fifth or the fourth round pick that we use him on, don't you, man?
Yeah, I do. And I think that he will round out and hopefully take a bigger leap in year two, because I think that he is a really good defensive lineman. I think that maybe he just has to, I don't know, get a little stronger, put a little weight on, or, you know, just maybe have the game slow down a little bit for him. Because I thought that in spurts, I remember seeing him make some pretty good plays. So,
yeah, definitely. So up next is Sean Clifford from Penn State. I'm just going to tell you right now, he didn't make my top 150. And if I remember correctly on the consensus big board, all right, let's handle it like we have everybody else. He graded out a 56.8. We took him with the 149th pick. Okay. I remember this being one of those guys that when they drafted him, Jacob, it was like, what in the world are they thinking? Everyone, all the experts said that dude was going to be an undrafted free agent. If Goody spent a fifth round pick on him, he was not going to be an undrafted free agent. He got intel that told him that Sean Clifford was going to be drafted. I promise you. So he was on the consensus big board 420.
Who's just below him? DeVito.
Tommy DeVito. I can't stand that guy.
Anyway. I can't stand him either.
Yeah, so we took the 423rd prospect on the consensus big board in the fifth round. Now, I personally think that Sean Clifford is going to be a good backup. I do. And it's one of the reasons why I hope they don't draft a quarterback. But as a fan of the Green Bay Packers and not just Sean Clifford, you know if they take a quarterback, it means Goody thinks he is significantly better than Sean Clifford. There's no doubt. But were you surprised when they took Sean Clifford here? I know we all were like, where is he ranked at? We had to go way down in the basement to find him.
I was surprised, but once they – because if you remember, they drafted him, and then the announcers basically immediately said, like, oh, this is 100% just a clipboard backup that's going to help Jordan Love learn. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's still older than Jordan Love, if I'm not mistaken.
And he's played more football than Jordan Love, believe it or not.
Played more football than college, any other quarterback, that was coming out. He was very well versed. So, yeah, I wasn't super surprised once the, like, rationality of it was explained. But I honestly thought he looked great. I was I was one of those people that when Love was at the worst of the worst, I was flirting with the idea of wanting to at least see what Clifford could do, just because he looked pretty good in preseason. If you guys remember, he was not afraid to force in some rocket balls. It was like a little mini Brett Favre out there. So,
yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch, man. If Jordan ever gets banged up and Sean Clifford has to fill in, I don't find myself going, oh, God, Sean Clifford. I find myself, like, on the edge of my seat, like, let's see what Sean can do here. Because Matt LaFleur said he's a gamer. And, it's funny, Dave's in the chat says, the Clifford disrespect shaking my head. And then I think it was Prince said Goody likes him some big conference guys. He does. Now, check this out, though. Sean Clifford, who were we just talking about earlier at quarterback position? Will Levis, right? Sean Clifford actually beat Will Levis out at Penn State, and Will Levis had to transfer to Kentucky to be able to play. So Sean Clifford actually beat him out for that job. What are you laughing at? I missed it.
John's comment. He said he also wasn't afraid to risk willing to play his receivers.
Was it him that got no, it was Mr. Magoo that Ryan went on the rant for that got Grant DeBose hurt, wasn't it? Or was it Taylor? He got somebody hurt in camp. They said he threw a hospital ball and got him hurt. I remember Ryan going off. He's like, yeah, he's, talking about Magoo. He's like, yeah, oh, yeah, everybody's excited about having the MVP of a crappy league. We just got our receiver hurt. I'll never forget that pod. Training camp's fun, man. I know people get bored with it, but I love getting the camp updates. I know you dig it too, Jacob. I love us getting on the pod and you kind of going through Twitter and finding out, hey, here's what happened at practice today. That stuff's always enjoyable to me. But, yeah, I remember the hospital ball from Sean Clifford. I do. Or from Mr. Magoo. I'm sure Sean Clifford has some hospital balls too, especially being ranked 423rd. My God, man.
He peaked at 327.
Yeah, give him some respect. He was still undrafted at his peak. But all right, let's go rapid fire here. We're going to get into a couple good ones. We're at the 48-minute mark, so we've got to go a little quicker here. Dontavian Wicks, 77.8. The second highest graded receiver on the team. People are going, who was the first? Bo Melton, actually. Thanks for asking. A lot less snaps, but still, Bo Melton's got – I think he's got a future in the league. 77.8 was his PFF grade. He was out of Virginia. We took him at 159 with an RAS of 9.17. Okay, you guys know I told you that Greg Cosell on a pod when he was breaking it down, he said Dontavian Wicks, this kid out of Virginia, he said this kid gets it. He is a technician is what he said, talking about route running. You've seen it all over the tape this year too. So, again, we take him at 159. Let's see where the consensus big board had him. 159 is where we took Dontavian Wicks, and they had him at 162, but he peaked at 68. So you could see that's right about where he should have been taken according to the consensus big board, right, Jake?
Yeah, look at who he's paired with right there too, Puka Nacua and him, right?
Almost. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Oh, love it, dude. Could you imagine what if you would somehow, some way have gotten Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, and Puka Nacua in the same draft?
That would have been crazy. I mean, if you remember too, his knock was that when he came out that he was still wanted to be a basketball player and that he didn't quite take football that seriously. Because that was like something that made him fall a little bit, I think, in some of the recruiters' eyes or whatever. And then I remember the initial, like week one into training camp, there was multiple reports of like actual coaches. And I think even LaFleur saying like, yeah, his footwork is like up on par of Davante Adams. And I was like, what? How is that even possible? And then sure enough, he's one of the most like precise route runners I remember seeing as a rookie. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So Dontavian Wicks on my big board, I actually had him. I know I have him on here. If I can find him. He's toward the bottom. He was below Jonathan Mingo. I do know that. Let's see here as I comb through. You can go ahead and read that chat if you want as I try to find him here.
SDN40 is just saying that Wicks is another one that had a down senior year after having a monster junior year.
Bingo.
IRC means.
Telling you, man, it's. I think it's important implementing that onto the draft board. I had him in the 136 spot, okay? And we took him at, what was it, 150, what was it again, Jacob? 159. So I had him at 136. We took him at 159. Great value there. I caught some hell over Puka Nacua. You guys remember, I was standing on the table for Puka Nacua, and I remember specifically someone tweeting at me, and they said, get off of PFF's poll. Is what they said. They said I was a PFF pole rider is what they said. But Puka Nacua, obviously, I had him in the 112 spot. And consensus big board had him at 164. He had peaked at 87. It's a perfect example, guys. Think about it. As the season was ending, Puka Nacua was peaking at 87. And the second the season ended, he started dropping for no reason. There was no more football being played. Nothing happened negatively to drop his draft stock. For some reason, he went from 87 to 164. That's why every time we point that out, you heard me last night with Jake Shavink on the show. I'm like, Jake, what could have possibly happened for, you know, insert player's name to drop after there's been no more football played? But it was before the combine. And he said something along the lines of, it's just media, man. Media putting out information, right? And it's exactly what it comes down to. It's why it's important to get your information into the database before all that stuff starts shuffling, right? Because these media members, they can't hide behind their opinion when a player's balling out in real time, right? You know, if someone goes out and scores three touchdowns and has 140 yards receiving, you drop him on your big board, you're going to get roasted for it. They wait till the dust settles, and they got their ends with the universities, and they're trying, okay, well, let's make this guy look better than he is. Let's drop this guy down. There's a lot of politicking that goes on. You got to be careful. That's why you need to limit who you're listening to, right, when it comes to draft experts. I'm not saying listen to us. We're a bunch of knuckleheads. I'm saying listen to people like Greg Cosell. Listen to people like Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, people that have been in the building. People hate him. Michael Lombardi's another one. They all swing and miss. But these are guys, Scott Pioli, they've been in draft rooms, right? Those are the guys I want to listen to. What were you giggling about, Jake?
Nothing.
Okay. Probably not worthy to put on the show. Got it. So, yeah, Dontavian Wicks, again, we got him with the 159. I had him at 136, so another great value there according to my board. Carl Brooks graded out of 69.8 out of Bowling Green. We took him with the 179th pick. Obviously, the athletic score dropped him down a touch, Jacob, 5.88. This was a guy that was 300 pounds that played defensive end at Bowling Green. Obviously comes into league kind of projected as a defensive tackle because of his composite size and everything.
He graded out crazy well in PFF too. Wasn't he like in the 90s for multiple years?
I think he might have been the top defensive lineman in college football. Like, he was up at the top, bro. He was way up there. So, yeah, Carl Brooks with the 179 spot. Let's see what the consensus big board said about Carl Brooks. I can't even remember where they had him.
They had him ranked pretty there, right there.
Yeah, 115.
Wow.
Got it.
81.
Yep. So, another one, like, what happened to make him drop, you know? Probably the combine, I imagine, with that RAS, right? He's thinking out
small school, yeah.
Yeah, that too. Bowling Green, you're right. So think about this with Tyler Newbin, right? He's going to drop. He's going to sink on draft boards because of that combine, right? We showed you, what's his name? Used to play for Seattle. Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor had a similar RAS score, right? He was a dominant safety in the box for the Legion of Boom, which just so happens to be the origins of the Jeff Hafley defense, right? So, going to be interesting, though. But Carl Brooks, yeah, he was one of the steals of the draft.
Isn't it kind of crazy how lately especially the last two or three drafts where they looked at safety position at guys that for whatever reason, maybe they ran a 4.6 or their composite size isn't like, so we look at Kyle Hamilton, he got knocked. All of a sudden, he's literally like the best safety in the league. Brian Branch, he got knocked. All of a sudden, he's like one of the best safeties in the league. I just think it'd be stupid to, I think he's going to follow that same kind of track.
Yeah, I agree. The tape matters the most, man. And when you're looking at the consensus big boards and things like this, which is one of my favorite tools, I'm not trying to knock it, but they're not going and watching the tape, right? They're going off of hearsay. They're going off so-and-so saying that the teams are on this player, that player. There's just a lot more. Not that no one watches the tape, but there's a lot more that goes into it, right? Ben Holden says in the chat, watch Carl Brooks on tape. He was an animal. And Jacob, we talked about it when we were doing our camp updates. Matt LaFleur said it all camp long. Great job, Carl. Great job, Carl. Yeah. They said people were reporting you could hear him screaming that. So he popped right from day one, and it was one of Jacob's camp crushes. I remember it. Tim talks about it all the time. He's like, man, I remember Jacob standing on the table for Carl Brooks just hearing his camp updates. So, yeah. Next, we got Anders Carlson. Obviously, he's not going to make the list for anything. He graded out really bad, 42.4. I pulled up his field goal percentage. He ended up finishing 25th in field goal percentage, right? Again, I always point out his field goal percentage was still higher than Mason Crosby's rookie year, right? I'm all about giving him another chance come in this year. He's going to get better, a full season under his belt. The nerves are going to be settled a little bit. Work on your, on your swing there, your leg swing and everything. It doesn't mean you don't bring in competition. You got to be willing to bring in competition for every single position, man. You got to make the team better in every single avenue possible. So we'll see what happens at Anders Carlson and if they bring someone else in too. Carrington Valentine was taken at the 232nd spot. Guys, I'm a Kentucky fan. You hear me talking about cornerback being one of, if not the biggest needs of this team. And most of the time I get pushback. People say, no, we got Carrington Valentine. He's great. He wasn't great, guys. I'm a Wildcat fan through and through. Been a Wildcat fan my entire life. Carrington Valentine did not play good last year. He did not. You can turn on the tape and see. And people, well, what about this play? Yeah, okay, you picked out three plays from an entire season. You can do that with any player in the league. He was not consistent. There was a couple times that touchdowns should have been caught on him, that whether they were dropped or it was a bad throw where he got burnt. That's what I love about PFF is they're grading that player, what they think his assignment was. Okay, how did he perform? Remove all the other variables is the goal here, right? 57.5 was his PFF grade. Now, again, he could take a big jump. He was a seventh-round pick, and he was available. That's important too, right? Availability, accountability. He's got those two traits, right? But as far as the talent on the field, man, I wasn't that impressed. Let's see where the consensus big board actually had him, because he had a good RAS. It was, what, 9.3, I believe?
Yeah.
So let's see. Carrington Valentine. Yeah, 232 is where he was sitting at. So 232, again, we took him. Look where we took him. That's wild, ain't it? So for a seventh-round pick, it is what it is. He was picked right where he should have been. If going into the season, if someone told you, hey, we're going to take a seventh round pick and he's going to start the entire season, but he's going to play bad, nobody's going to be surprised by that, right?
Yeah.
Kind of what we expected. Prince says in the chat, Valentine got away with getting grabby a few times too. I remember seeing that too. And that was one of his knocks in college. Valentine was cheeks is what Freddie says. All right, now guys, let's calm down. Okay, he's still a Kentucky Wildcat at heart. Let's don't get too crazy. He was cheeks. I can't lie. But I think it's a good floor, Jacob. He's got a lot of experience, right? If you go out and you draft an outside and an outside corner this year, right, and you bring back Corey Ballantyne, I think Corey Ballantyne is significantly better than Carrington Ballantyne on the boundary. That's just me personally. If for some reason you go out and you draft, say, Kool-Aid McKinstry, he falls in your lap, whether it's the first or second round or whatever, and he's your starter and he goes down, I feel pretty good about Carrington coming in as a backup. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got some experience. That's a good role for him. But to just march him out there week in and week out and say, all right, that's your outside corner opposite Ja, I think you're setting yourself up for some big disappointments. So what do you think about Carrington, man?
He just seems like one of those players where if he takes a big second-year jump, then maybe, like you said, it'd be not bad to have him as the floor of that group. But I just think, that, like you said, it was so unlike us because we're usually very hesitant to just throw rookies out there and especially give them a lot of playing time. It's felt like with him, we were just like, all right, just throw him out there and just that's what we got for the rest of the year. Maybe, you know, to his credit, maybe, you know, that 57.5 as a rookie that really didn't know what he was doing. Hopefully if he takes a step up and he can be in the mid 60s, I think it'd be great going forward. And I want him to succeed. Do I think that he's our answer right now at the opposite corner? No, I don't.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very well said. Let's see. Next pick was Lou Nichols. Okay. Obviously he wasn't in my top 150. I don't think he was in anyone's top 150. We took him at 235. They ended up, I put cut, but really it was an injury settlement. He hurt his shoulder. They come to an injury settlement, which if I understood the rules correctly and I remember them correctly, they could have brung him back in 3 weeks, but if they didn't bring him back in 3 weeks, he could have signed with another team. To the best of my knowledge, he didn't sign with anyone else. So he's out of the league, I believe. And again, he didn't have an RAS. He was drafted with the 235th pick. The consensus big board had Lou Nichols at 384. So, you know, kind of what you expect. He peaked at 230, right? He did peak at 230. So Goody just kind of took a flyer on him there in the seventh. Next was Anthony Johnson Jr. He falls, in my opinion, in the same category with Carrington Ballantyne. He was available. He was accountable. He played a ton of snaps. There you go. Prince says that Lou Nichols is actually on the Eagles roster. Good information. Appreciate you, buddy. Anthony Johnson Jr. was taken with the 242nd pick with an 8.13 RAS. He graded out a 47.9. Jacob, he played a ton of snaps this year, man, a ton of snaps, but didn't grade out that well, right? And again, we've seen the passer rating against the Green Bay Packers went through the roof. The points per play in the passing defense, according to the 33rd team in SIS data, increased significantly last year. It was one of the things that took a step back. We took a step forward in points allowed as a defense. We gave up less rushing yards. We gave up everything pretty much got a little bit better across the board on the defense from the previous year, other than the passing game. And I don't think it's any coincidence that you had Carrington Ballantyne, a seventh-round pick, and Anthony Johnson Jr., a seventh-round pick out there playing. So, again, we took him with a 242nd pick, 47.9. I think it's good that he got some experience, and that's your floor in the safety room, but you've got to get better at safety. When we look at the safety room and where he was on the big board, Anthony Johnson Jr., there were several people that were kind of big on him. I specifically remember that.
He shot up at one point. He was, what the heck?
He may have been, I may have already overlooked him because I remember thinking, okay, there's a lot of people that lock him. Let's see if he was a little higher here.
At one point.
There he is, 61. I'm just joking. That's Antonio Johnson. I was about to freak out, man.
Where is he? That's weird.
Anthony Johnson Jr. He may have been listed as a corner too. We'll check that. Some of those late round guys, it gets a little bit wonky in that regard. He's definitely not listed as a safety on the consensus big board.
Because I remember at one point that he was as high up as a third round. I remember that specifically because I remember looking at it and being like, wow, this dude has fluctuated all over.
Yep, you're right. 130 was where he peaked. He was sitting at 224 as a corner, and we played him at safety. So, yeah, again, Anthony Johnson Jr., right? Yeah, that's him. Wait a minute. No. Hold up a minute. Let me just make sure here. Yeah, Anthony Johnson Jr. Yeah, Iowa State. Okay, we got two of them is the reason I'm worried there. So, yeah, he was sitting at 224, and we took him at 242. So, decent value there for the pick. They're in the seventh round. The problem is they try to fit a square peg in a round hole, right? Everyone had him listed as a corner. They played him at safety, and he graded out in the 40s. So, maybe he's more fit to be a corner. I know the big thing on him, and I was kind of big on him because I heard some guys on the Journey to the Draft podcast say he's a really good top-down safety, which is good for a Fangio-style defense. But obviously, it just didn't translate over. So, yeah, you were right, though, Jacob. He did peak at the 130 mark as a cornerback, I'm assuming. So, yeah. All right. Then the final one, of course, is Grant DuBose. He ended up on the practice squad last year. He's now been signed to a futures contract. Little inside information here, like, If I understand correctly, when you draft a player, they're on a four-year rookie deal, right? If you move them to the practice squad, you void that four-year rookie deal. But if they're on the practice squad and you sign them to a futures contract, they're now back on a two-year deal, okay? So he is on a two-year futures contract, if I understand the rules correctly. But he basically was on the practice squad all year. He had an 8.79 RAS. He was picked with the 256th overall pick. And we're talking about, like I said, Grant DuBose. He was one of those guys that in camp we were kind of hearing some rumblings, wasn't we, Jacob? Like, hey, this guy might be something.
Charlotte.
Yep. And so when we look at where he was projected, 213, he peaked at 175. His value on the big board was 213 at the time of the draft. And again, we took him at 256. So good value there, according to the consensus big board. So there you go. We got through it. We're an hour, 5 minutes. Let's wrap this big bear up. Jacob, this is a lot of fun, man. Go ahead and read that comment as I shut everything down here.
Sure. Michael Redden said that, "I don't think it's stressed enough how much experience our new coaching staff has with college players, considering how young we are and how much younger we will get, especially on defense. It's exciting."
Yeah, it really is, man. And the offense is legit a top 10 offense, right? And that's why I was trying to say to Jake last night when we were doing our mock draft, I was like, when it came down to the Tyler Newbin pick or taking an offensive lineman, luckily Newbin fell to us and it worked out anyway. So it ended up being the right move that Jake, you know, making that suggestion of, hey, let's go interior offensive line here. But our offense is a top 10 offense. Our defense is somewhere around the 16, 17 mark, right? So you'd like to see get that up there in the top 10. I think they finished 12th in scoring, if I remember correctly. So they weren't as bad as the Joe Barry haters, you know, appeared to make them. Especially down the stretch, they got better too. But nonetheless, I think you heard me at the end of the year, really the second half of the year, was like, all right, we just got to make a move. It's time to move on from Joe Barry. I hung on as long as I could. I didn't look at it as a scheme problem. I didn't look at it as a coaching problem. I look at it more as a player problem. Those guys were just standing out there in space. And the whole Devondre Campbell thing was just so weird, man. That dude was – He gave Joe Barry praise when he won All-Pro and was like, yeah, they finally used me right. And then when he takes a step back, well, they're not using me right. It was weird. But anyway, we're not going to end it on a negative note here. We got Jeff Hafley. We got Derek Ansley. We got this whole our boy Campanile, linebacker coach. I'm excited to hear the beat reporters and everybody at training camp practice. I'm excited to hear Tim over there texting me going, man, Campanile's dropping F-bombs, boys. You know it's going to happen. But, Jacob, anything else, man, as we wrap up here, buddy?
No, man. I think that'll be good for me right now. We're creeping up on 1 million views, guys, so that's pretty cool. I'm excited about that. We should hit it any day now. So appreciate everybody, all your support.
The numbers are through the roof, man, you know, other than the hiccup here with YouTube, and still haven't gotten an answer. I'm begging for, hey, what do we need to change to so that when we do get monetized again, it doesn't happen again. I can't get answers. So I'm trying. But what we may end up doing is just doing the whole Patreon thing. If you guys want to continue to do the giveaways and stuff, we can create a Patreon group. We could go that route. Obviously, we're live on Rumble, and we want to stay live on YouTube, but I'm not going to try to jump through hoops to get monetized, man. I'm just not going to do it. I don't want to water down content, especially when I can't get a straight answer of, hey, you're not allowed to do this. Because essentially, what it sounds like is the live stream, everything's fine. We're giving credit when we're using content. They're getting the profit from it, the monetization. If we do use something and it gets triggered as a copyright, that's totally legal. You're allowed to do that. It sounds like there's a hiccup with the shorts videos that were uploaded, because I just assumed, okay, if it gets a copyright, those people will get paid for it. No big deal, right? YouTube hounded the heck out of me saying, upload shorts, that'll increase engagement. Okay, I don't like shorts. I don't watch shorts, but I'll do it, upload it, and then bang, it ends up hurting the channel. So it's a little bit frustrating. SDM40 in the chat said, did Wall give you an idea when he can be a guest? Wall is pretty much open middays for the most part. He said the other day, he said, I can call in, but I'm on the road to Texas to go to a, I think it was a soccer game for one of his kids. He said, I don't know if the reception will be good, so I don't want to take time away from family with that. We'll get him on soon. I'd like to get him on sooner rather than later and just kind of get his take. I want to get his take on the linebackers, Jacob. I want to get it from an offensive lines perspective of, hey, when you think of a 4-3 linebacker from an offensive lines perspective, what do you think makes a good 4-3 linebacker? You know what I'm saying? That type of thing. I think it would be really cool to get it from the opponents. You know, you heard Tausch talk about Mark Tauscher talk about playing against 34 defenses and 43 defenses. He felt like it was easier to run on a 43 defense than a 34 defense. That's why I'm a little bit hesitant to just jump all in on a 4-3 defense, because I've always understood it the same way. You've got 900 pounds inside the tackles in a 34 jam front. With a 4-3 front, you're only going to have about, you know, 600 pounds in between the tackles. So that worries me a little bit in the run game. And the run defense did get better last year from the year before under Joe Barry. It's just, unfortunately, the pass defense took a step back. So hopefully Jeff Hafley can put it all together for us, though. And I think he will, man. I'm excited to see big Ogabasi on the sideline, too. That boy right there, man, looking like a bouncer. That's what I'm talking about. Which, Jacob, I heard you didn't make it through Roadhouse, man. What happened?
Oh, my God, y'all. I'm going to try to finish it today, but it was just, bro.
Was it too cringy?
It was really cringy. I mean, and every single, like, character, they replaced it with, like, a woke woman. Like, and they don't explain really, like, it just was really bad. I wanted it to be good so bad. I didn't even get to the part with Conor McGregor yet, but I know he's just going to stink up the place.
He is the William Shatner of action movies. Like, he's going to, I watched it. When you said you were watching, I said, all right, I'll watch it too. So
you watched it?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I enjoyed it for
how you,
again, I told you, I've never seen a bad movie. This is me. I'm not a movie guy. So when I watch a movie, I can appreciate it for what it is and not be like overly critical. I know some people there, if you watch a bunch of movies, like my brother-in-law, he's watched every movie known to man. And he's very, you know, I didn't like it because of this. I didn't like it because of that. Me, I'm like, it's on the background. We're good. It's an original story, right? They didn't tie it into the original by no stretch of the imagination. So it's its own movie. But if you've seen the first one, there's little things that they did tie together, like him getting stabbed and the nurse, you know, the whole thing. You've seen the first one, right, Jacob?
Yes, of course.
I'm just making sure, yeah. So those little things like that kind of came back in. I thought the special effects were good. You didn't make it to some of the best fight scenes. So
I'm going to try to sit down and watch it. I was very critical because, yeah, that was one of the first movies that my dad watched with me. And he was like, you got to watch Roadhouse. And I was I fell in love with all the girls in that movie. And then, yeah, so I had a lot of high hopes. I didn't like Gyllenhaal as Dalton. I don't know. Whatever, man.
I got you. I thought Gyllenhaal did okay, where he brings kind of a, you find out toward the end of the movie why he's so nice, why he's so kind of, I thought it was a decent story. But again, I'm not a movie person. Am I going to watch it again? No. I don't ever watch movies twice unless it's draft day, because draft day is, come on, man. You got to watch draft day 50 times in the month of April every year. It's just the way it is. I know people are going to disagree, but that's all right. So,
okay, I am.
All right, we're out of here, guys. We're way over here talking about Roadhouse and bad acting from our man Conor McGregor. But anyway, Chris, original was great. Not watching the new one. Probably a smart move if you like the first one, Chris. All right, guys. This was me, though, man. It did fire me up, man. I'm standing on the couch, you know, throwing those shadow boxing a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I was out there watching it like.
Good morning.
Andy walked in and was like, why are you standing on the couch? Shut up. I'm watching Roadhouse. Get away from me. All right. It's a serious problem. So, all right. We're out of here, guys. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us. Everybody in the chat, thank you so much. I know we had a ton of people on Rumble. It's growing every day. So, yeah, whatever platform you want to choose, we'll try to go live on all four every time. That's Facebook, YouTube, X, and Rumble. So appreciate all the feedback. Like Jacob said, we're approaching the 1 million view mark on YouTube, which is absolutely awesome. We're going to hit it real soon. Got the channel cranking, unfortunately. We're not maximizing the benefit of it, but that's all right, man. We didn't get
it. No, we should do it at YouTube. Best.
Roadhouse.
I told him, man, I'm like, listen, I want to stay on here, but you're making it kind of difficult. I understand you got rules. I just like to know what the rules are. And they go, you got to go read the policy. So you can't show me specifically what happened, what went wrong. Okay, got it. This is tough, man. Tough look. So anyways, we're out of here. We'll see you guys later. Again, probably will not be a show tonight. There's a chance if I get back in time, but we're not going to rush it. We're just going to spend some time with family this evening. So if the guys want to do one, they've got free reign to throw one out there. If not, then I will see you guys tomorrow night, and the guys may do a show tomorrow morning. So we're out. Appreciate everybody. As always, let's go. I love it. Chris says, go Pack, go. 1 million views is diesel worthy. You got that right, man. We'll save the diesel for that for sure. So we'll hit you with this. It's his draft season.
Who in the hell is Mel Kiper in a way?
That's what I'm saying. Billy told me. In a way. I love y'all's conversation. Is he saying anyway? No, he's saying anyway. Anyway, he was in the whiskey that morning. What it was. So, all right. We'll see y'all later. Everybody have a great day. For those of you listening on the pod, thank you for making us a part of your day. As always, let's go out and be the change we want to see in the world. And go Pack, go.